What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Luis Contreras trying to start the handshake line, and we get a ground ball to Altuve. Four-hit day, and he makes the play for the final out. Astros win it 9-1. And Blummer, after a rough start to this homestand, that's good back-to-back games here to wrap it up.
Yeah, right now, as we're coming in, it's the third day of pass. Anytime you have 3 days of pass, it's gonna get chippy. Guys are sore, guys are beat up. That's training camp, so it's expected. Guys get a little chippy at times, but also just keeping it confined, not letting it get out of hand. Thought guys did a good job of that.
All right, Todd Callis on the call, Space City Home Network on that first cut. Astros win again 9-1. And that, of course, was the head coach of the Houston Texans, D'Amico Ryans, talking about the first, I would say, practice workout, a little chippy. For everybody who's kind of a pugilist and wants fighting out at training camp, this has not been a camp for you. There's been a lot of nice physical play, but there's not been any fisticuffs yet. We came kind of close at the end yesterday, but things were split up. But it's been a fun camp. Defense has ruled the day for most of this camp, and that was what happened yesterday. We'll talk about takeaways from training camp in just a minute or so here. You hear the Astros winning 9-1. They're 5 games up in the AL West. Big trade last night in the division. Eugenio Suarez coming to the AL West, but not to the Houston Astros. He's going to be a Seattle Mariner. Mariners 5 games back. We got a lot to get to. Brandon Scott in for Seth Payne. Seth back tomorrow. B. Scott, how you feeling, man?
Man, so the trade deadline is heating up. We'll see what the Astros do throughout the day. And on the point of training camp, is it really training camp until it gets testy? Until it feels like, you know, we're out there and we're enjoying. You and I were just doing this, 8 days ago, right? Kind of introducing the audience to training camp. And here we are. It doesn't feel like it really begins until those guys themselves get frustrated with being around one another.
Doesn't begin until Rust Yeast gets up in some receiver's, third string receiver's face.
Yeah.
And everybody needs to be separated. Kamari Lassiter's running out there like a maniac. Just Kamari Lassiter looks over there and says, there's people hitting each other. And he just runs out there. It's fun, man.
Yeah. No, good times.
Yeah. Off today. No Texans training camp practice today. That's why we're in studio. They're practicing tomorrow and Saturday. And then Seth and I are off to the Greenbrier for practice next week. We'll have eyes on that. We'll be checking in with all the shows here on Sports Radio 610. Yingling sending us there. So we're very, very excited about that. So we should mention, too, the Astros made a trade overnight as well. Not a big one. Ramon Urias.
Yeah.
I think I'm pronouncing it right. You know, the
not quite the Eugenio Suarez trade, Sean.
No. And you know when you're not sure how to pronounce the player's name that you just traded for, it's probably not a big trade.
Yeah.
He's a third base. He's the Orioles' third baseman. He's played, you know, he's a competent major leaguer, which they're lacking in right now in the everyday lineup. He's a third baseman who can play other positions. He sounds like their version of Dubon, maybe.
To be fair, and Isak Paredes is a much better player, but there were people, I would say there were casual fans, right? Unless you were locked into Tampa Bay Rays games of the past years, or if you knew he played for the Cubs last year, there were people that might have called him Isaac or didn't know that there was an emphasis on the Spanish pronunciation of his name. Fair. So he would be one of those players, but this notably is not an Isak Paredes caliber player.
No, I didn't see Ramon Urias on the All-Star snubs list or anything like that. So they picked up a guy last night, picked up a competent big leaguer last night. I would imagine they're not done, or at least efforting to not be done. You know, it takes two to tango. So we'll see what happens today with the trade deadline. We'll talk more about that. Bob Nightingale was on with the guys on Area 45 last night. Bob Nightingale, USA Today. About as good an insider as you can find in terms of talking to front offices around the league. Yeah. We'll hear from him in the 620 segment. We'll dig deeper on the Astros and where they are on trade deadline day. Let's start with the Texans. Practice number 7 yesterday, the third straight practice in pads, and it did not disappoint.
Yes.
Whereas the offense had the upper hand 2 days ago, and somewhat noticeably at times, the offense looked really good, especially for an offense that's still getting installed. It's got four new starters on the offensive line. If Jake Andrews is indeed going to be your starter at center, we'll get to the offensive line in a second. Yesterday was a defense day, and it wasn't a defense day that was dominant in the way that some of them have been, B-Scott, where it's been Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter and the defensive line just caving things in, and you can't even get a playoff. That did happen at times. The secondary yesterday was really, really good. They did not give any of the Texans receivers any room to operate. Now, there were some plays here and there, some good throws here and there, but there were some turnovers. There were a couple of pick sixes. Jalen Reed, MJ Stewart with pick sixes. Here was D'Amico Ryans after practice yesterday on the defensive performance.
We'll go back and look at it on film. I thought overall, as I assessed practice, just overall thought, you know, it looked like from the field, defense had the upper hand, made a lot of plays on the football, and they continued to do that all throughout camp, and we just had to find a way continue to not make those plays. We got to protect the ball from an offensive perspective. Really pleased with what the defense is doing, but you don't want to see that too much, you know, from an offensive side. So we'll continue to look at the film, continue to evaluate it, all these practices. Like, this is, I think, day 7 for us. This is continuing to learn from what we're doing. So we'll continue to put guys in different situations. It's the first time doing a 2-minute drill today. We'll continue to work on that and continue to make sure guys are situationally aware, playing smart football when it comes down to the end of the game.
I think the thing that's most encouraging, we know the starters are good in this secondary. Derek Stingley Jr., there's no better defensive back in football than Derek Stingley Jr. Kamari Lassiter is really good and ascending. The safety position, I mean, C.J. Gardner-Johnson looks like he's going to be a great pickup for this team. The fact that it's guys like rookie Jalen Reed, M.J. Stewart, a vet, Tre'Mon Smith had an interception in team drills. Jalen Smith, the rookie out of USC, has been making a lot of plays on the ball.
And, of course, Kalen Bullock, who we all know, but seems to be emerging in a different way in training camp.
Yeah. Like, it's the depth pieces.
Yes.
The depth pieces, the Reeds and the Stewarts and the Smiths, and the Smith again. Multiple Smiths.
Multiple Smiths, multiple Jalens, multiple Jadens,
yeah.
A lot of names that rhyme. It's going to be confusing at times.
We're a week in, and the two of these guys I just named were a week into their careers.
Yeah.
So I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but it's the depth pieces doing it is encouraging, because that's not been one of the strengths of this team is the depth of the secondary.
Well, it's not only has it not been one of the strengths of the team historically or in the past, but it would be a fair and maybe one of the few question marks about the defense going into even this season, mm-hmm. right? Like, I don't think we're going into this training camp saying, hey, watch out for the other Jalens, for the Jalen Reeds and Smiths of the world, or and see what MJ Stewart's going to do in training camp. I don't think any of us thought that. If we had any questions about the defense, which we were all excited about, it was that it was top heavy and that they didn't have the depth in the secondary, at linebacker, maybe even at defensive. I know some of the national pundits thought the interior defensive line wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? If you go out there and watch them at training camp, and if you kind of pay attention to the roster, it seems like there is probably a little bit more there than we were giving them credit for. So that is definitely an encouraging sign, considering it's been an issue historically and was a question mark going into training camp.
Yep. Number two, the offensive line is slowly coming together. I'll say that a week in, the offensive line looks more competent this year than a week into training camp last year, when they had already penciled in all the starters and C.J. Stroud was getting super frustrated at camp a week in last year. It's not been great, but you can see the makings of a better, more unit with more continuity.
Yeah.
Or with more chemistry, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah.
The constants, the first three padded practices have been, first unit has been Cam Robinson at left tackle, Lakin Tomlinson at left guard, Titus Howard at right guard, and then the rookie Ariante Ursary has been with the ones at right tackle the entirety of the padded practices so far. The one area that they've been flipping back and forth is the center. Jake Andrews has been with the ones to start out with the last 2 days, but they have been mixing and matching him and Jared Patterson with the ones and twos. So if I'm just reading that, I'm going, okay, well, it looks like at least early on they've settled in on this group, but they don't know who's going to be the center yet.
Yeah.
With maybe the possession arrow pointed towards Jake Andrews because he's been with the ones to start out with at practice the last 2 days.
Yeah, to me, this is the most newsworthy part of what you're seeing at training camp right now. Like, obviously, it's exciting, and we'll talk about highlight plays and all of that, but it's training camp practice. What is training camp practice telling you about the Texans' intention for their team, I think, is even more significant. No disrespect to the guys in the secondary. They're out there getting interceptions and everything. But, like, what is the offensive line ultimately going to look like this season?
Mm-hmm.
And I think through three padded practices, exactly what you just laid out, the idea that Ariante Ursary, a second-round rookie, looks like he's going to contend for a starting spot. The idea that a second-round pick from last year looks like he's maybe fallen out of a potential starting spot. He could have been the only starter, semi-starter, penciled in back into his position. I know he didn't start at right tackle in the beginning of last year, but by the end of it, he was their right tackle.
Yeah.
And so he was going to be the only incumbent starter coming in, and it looks like he's going to lose
he's
that job.
The twos, yeah.
So to me, that's a significant development. And then, of course, the center position, right? Like, okay, like this is – it's cool for Nick Caserio that they've done so much with this roster that they've got an open center position. And a guy that they drafted a couple of years ago in the second round doesn't even appear to be that much in the competition for it.
You're talking about Juice Scruggs.
Yeah. And everybody's kind of cool with it because, like, because we think it, you know, it could potentially work out between what we've seen from Patterson and us understanding the history with Jake Andrews.
There's a lot. I think there's a bias with fans to want the higher picks to work out. You know, when there's a competition, like given their druthers, the fans would love to see Juice Scruggs, a second-round pick, instead of Jared Patterson, a sixth-round pick in the same draft. You know, you'd like to see those big high picks working out.
Yeah.
If for no other reason, because you feel like just they've been drafted high, there's the potential that there's still more out there for them, that there's a ceiling.
And you want to feel confidence in the people that are
in the front office
that are picking the players.
For sure. And I think there's a high confidence level in Nick Caserio picking these players, except the offensive line, they've just not hit on those picks to the level they've hit pretty much everywhere else on the football team,
yeah,
to some degree. I think Texan fans with the offensive line, they don't. I don't, and I know I feel that. I don't care who it is. I just want them to protect C.J. Stroud.
Well, and that's
if Juice Scruggs gets cut, I don't care.
That's the point. That's because the team is good. Like, if the Texans were bad, and you just had all of these first round picks out here who weren't working out, or your center wasn't, like, that would put a much bigger magnifying glass on it. But they're a good team, and so it's okay if he doesn't work out.
Yep, exactly right. I'm going to hit these real quick because we're up against it. Just three other quick takeaways. C.J. Stroud, equal amount of reps yesterday with everybody else. I know that was a big concern of Clint Sterner's, is that C.J. had been getting fewer reps than some of the third stringers. They literally had – I kept track snap to snap. They all played the same number of snaps in the team drills. They all got the same number of situational – 2 minute drill.
Clint wants them to have
drives.
More, apparently. He wants them to have way more.
He said he threw
five balls in a week when he was a third string.
Clint was upset that they hadn't let CJ cut it loose. Literally, his first pass was a 60 yard bomb to Nico Collins.
They might have been listening.
I felt like they, if, I don't know if they were, but it felt like they were.
Yeah.
So CJ got a normal workload. I'm not concerned about CJ Stroud. He looks great. The ball coming off his hands. He's been up and down as far as what the results have been, but it's exactly where I would expect C.J. Stroud with a new offense and a new offensive line to be a week into camp.
And going against what seems like a pretty good defense.
The best defense in football, possibly, yeah. Yep. Big Kymie Fairbairn day yesterday, 6-for-6 on field goals in the situational stuff, including a 3 of 50 yards or longer. So Kymie had a nice day yesterday. First injury of camp, first stretcher or cart injury of camp. Keontae Hamilton, the seventh-round rookie out of Rutgers, defensive tackle, left on a stretcher with an air cast on his leg. Other than that, it's been a pretty healthy camp for the Texans.
Yeah, and knock on wood. You know, want it to remain that way. Obviously, you don't want anybody to get carried off on a card or anything like that, but this was he was ultimately probably going to be a depth piece if he made the team, and so, you know, wishing him the best.
Trade deadline is today. Major League Baseball, 5 o'clock this afternoon is when the deadline hits. The Astros made a move last night. Ramon Urias is what I'm being told it's pronounced. And I've got people on the text page hitting me up going, hey, Sean, guy was a Gold Glover a few years ago. That is true. So was Brendan Rodgers. I'm just going to point that out as well. But that's fine. And is this their solution for third base? Is this what the Astros are rolling with without Isak Paredes? We'll talk about that. Bob Nightingale was on with the Night Guys last night. What are the chances of a reunion with Carlos Correa? What are the chances of a reunion with Justin Verlander? Enter the chat. So we'll get to all that in the next segment coming up next. We are in studio today, back out of Texans training camp tomorrow. Sean Pendergast, B. Scott, in for Seth Payne. Stay there.
What are you hearing regarding the Astros and the trade deadline? Who are they most connected to?
Well, they're kind of all over the mat, Patrick. I mean, they're, you know, talking to the Twins about Carlos Correa, talking to St. Louis Cardinals about Nolan Arenado, hanging on the fringe with the Diamondbacks about Eugenio Suarez, talking to the Padres about Dylan Cease, looking for an outfielder. So, yeah, they're everywhere.
All right, that was Bob Nightingale of USA Today. He was on with the Area 45 guys last night, Patrick Creighton and Sean Bajani.
He was very specific. I like that.
He's good. Bob Nightingale is
direct.
He's very plugged in. The guys have him on pretty frequently throughout the season. You need to be listening to our station, not just throughout the day, but at night as well. Sean and Patrick do an excellent job. That cut was already obsoleted. It's already obsoleted because when they had this conversation last night, Eugenio Suarez had not been traded back to the Mariners, but he has been. If you're just waking up this morning, the Mariners, who are 5 games back of the Astros and tied with the Rangers all of a sudden have re-entered the situation here. The Mariners trade 3 prospects, including their number 9 prospect, first baseman Tyler Locklear, for Eugenio Suarez. So he's back with the Mariners. He's having a huge year power-wise. He did get hit in the hand with a pitch earlier this week, and there was thought when people saw that clip on social media, like, oh, crap, there goes one of the big pieces at the deadline here available. But indeed, he's going back to Seattle. So that's a big move. You know, Seattle has not been able to catch the Astros through these last few years, even though they've built a decent nucleus. But it's been mostly because of offense, not because of pitching. So that's a big move. We'll reiterate, the Astros did make a trade last night. They make a trade with the Orioles. Ramon Urias, an infielder who several people have pointed out on the text page, won a Gold Glove a few years ago. Decent hitter who can probably keep the baton passed in the middle of the lineup. Doesn't hit for big pop. Maybe got like 20 home run type of power. He's got 8 bombs this year. But a capable major leaguer. And we'll see if this ends up, B. Scott, being the solution for the Astros at third base. They traded, I know a lot of you are going to be wondering who they traded. The Astros traded a minor league pitcher named Twine Palmer. I don't think that's a real person.
No. Yeah, I think that they made that up.
That feels like
you made that up.
MLB 2K name.
I don't think you would make that up, but I think the Astros might.
Twine Palmer. You know, Twine Palmer is an excellent
AI.
It's an excellent rodeo cowboy name. You ever go to the rodeo and look at all the rodeo cowboy names, and you're like, that kid was named, you know, they're always like, Cole Rockface.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. You know, like, named to be a cowboy.
Dirt McGritty. You know, guy is supposed to be a cowboy. Twine Palmer. I don't know what he's doing pitching. I don't know if he exists. That doesn't sound like a real name. But anyways, the Astros pick up a third
baseman. No, he definitely seems like somebody that you could hear at the rodeo at one of those. Yeah. Like you're waiting on the concert to start, and you're like, "There's more barrel racing. There's another one of these little deal." Yeah. So, but to the point about the Astros and the Eugenio Suarez trade, I think is significant in 2 ways. That, you know, as you heard from the audio that we played coming in, that the Astros were at least in on this conversation. In on the possibility, who knows how close they were actually going to get, but they were in on the conversation, didn't get him, and not only do they not get him, but he goes to a division foe, and the division foe that's, you know, on their heels, and this is the one thing that they're lacking, the one thing that they need, which is what the trade deadline is obviously for, and that's the story of the Mariners, right? Really, really good pitching.
Yeah.
Can't hit their way out of a paper bag. So they get Yeniel Suarez back. You don't get him. It'll be interesting to see if at all that changes sort of the dynamic of this race going, you know, going forward because of how good he's been, honestly.
That's a big bat, man. That is a big bat for them to get a big power bat. Look, any of these trade targets that involves a bidding war,
yeah,
the Astros are probably going to lose that bidding war. They're not sitting at the table right now with stacks of chips in front of them. You know, they're going to have to find some distressed assets or some guys that teams are looking to get rid of, or guys that just maybe they've got scouting reports on and they haven't performed, whatever player it is hasn't performed up to snuff.
Yeah.
But they feel like once they get him in the building here, you know, particularly that's the case, I think, with pitching quite a bit. I think that was the case with Yusei Kikuchi last year, is once we get him in our building and put him through our car wash, that you'll get a better version of him. And they did.
Yeah.
He was, you know, they couldn't lose his starts last year when he got here. They would constantly win when they sent him out to the mound.
Yeah, but both teams, though, the Astros and the Mariners, going into the trade deadline, lacked power. And yeah, as of right now, I know we got several hours leading up to the deadline, but as of right now, the Mariners are the ones that got the power. The Astros didn't.
Yeah.
And it does seem like, you know, interesting every year how we hear about this with the Astros, how they don't have the prospects, they don't have the ability to go get somebody.
Yep.
And they figure out a way. So it feels like that could be another one of those years.
Sure. Yeah.
No, it has to be. Where are their prospects?
They have prospects, but it's like they don't have as many as other teams.
Right.
And do you want to empty your farm system further? It depends on the player. It depends on what the trade looks like. Carlos Correa's name's getting thrown around. We'll look at that in just a second. I want to hear a couple more from Nightingale, though, here. The guys on Area 45 last night asked him, what are the chances? Dylan Cease is the big name we're hearing about with the Astros right now. Former ace for the White Sox. He's pitching for the Padres now. He's not been great this year, but he would be a big pickup for whoever got him. And again, I think it's a bit of a Kikuchi situation where it's a rental. He's not pitched well, but he gets here, and he might be a guy who starts 8 or 9 games for you down the stretch, and you go 8-1 in his 9 starts or something like that. They feel that way about him. What are the percent chances that the Astros could land Dylan Cease?
What is the real deal with the Astros and Cease? What kind of likelihood do you think there's a deal there?
I'd say maybe it's a 25% chance, 30% chance. It seemed more hot and heavy than it's been. I think the Padres, you know, they don't want to give them away, obviously, because they're trying to get in the playoffs themselves. But, you know, if they get the right, you know, pitcher return, you know, probably a younger pitcher who's under control, you know, they'll do it. But, you know, then if you're the Astros, too, you're thinking, wait a minute now, why are we going to trade if, you know, if the Padres don't think they can win or make the playoffs with that guy, you know, then why are they going to do it? So it's interesting. He's got great stuff. He just seems frustrated there and can't seem to win there.
I don't know, man. It depends. I'm guessing there's other teams that are in on Dylan Cease if he's up on the trade block. And it sounds like, as Nightingale points out there, B. Scott, like the Padres are still in the race here.
Yeah.
So they're looking
for
something.
That's the part that confuses me.
Yeah, this is – well, the Padres feel like one of those teams, a little like a deluxe version of the Rays, where they're very honest with where they're at, and they're willing to deal – they're willing to buy or sell – and straddle the fence. Like,
yeah,
if the sale of Cease, if they're willing to sell Cease, they want to do it in a way that still keeps them in the mix
right
this year. Hence, they want some current players back in a deal like that. I don't know. The Cease deal doesn't excite me too much. If for no other reason, I think the Astros have reinforcements coming in the starting rotation right now.
See, that's the big thing, because I would say the Cease deal or a potential trade for Cease would excite me. For a number of reasons. First of all, Dylan Cease has been good historically. I know he hasn't been great this year.
Yep.
But I've seen the Astros, we have seen the Astros make a lot better of pitchers who are a lot worse than Dylan Cease, right? Like, do things with pitchers and improve their games that were not as good. Like, Dylan Cease was second in Cy Young voting like three years ago or something like that. Like,
yep,
he was a legit ace.
Yeah.
So, to me, if you're plunking that guy into, and as a pure rental, plunking that guy into like the middle of your rotation, or that's the third guy starting for you in a playoff series, in a postseason series, sign me up for that. But to your point, and I've been saying this really since well before we got to the trade deadline, they should have enough reinforcement coming pitching wise at the very least, to where they shouldn't have to do this, feel a need or desperation to do this, even if it'd be cool if they did it.
Well, if they're going to make a trade, like, to me, they're more desperate for bats than they are for arms
now. No question about it to me.
Now, along those lines, this Carlos Correa stuff, I mean, Nightingale was at the front of the charge front of the parade saying that they're in on, possibly in on Carlos Correa. We just heard that cut coming into the segment that they're calling Minnesota. They've had conversations with Minnesota about Carlos Correa. Correa was actually asked about this yesterday in the clubhouse after the Twins game. Twins are going nowhere right now. They're up on the sale block. They're looking to sell the team. Carlos Correa's salary is 25% of their total payroll right now, and he has not performed up to that this season, at least. He's been very up and down as a Twin. This is his fourth season with the Twins. He's had two good seasons, and now he's in the midst of the second of two bad seasons. It's kind of flipped back and forth. He was an all-star last year. He's been better of late. He's still only 30, 31 years old. So, Carlos has been around forever, and he's still a young player. Here was a little Q&A that Carlos did with the media after the game yesterday, talking about the possibility of coming to Houston.
I mean, I get full control, so we'll see how it goes. You know, you listen to the rumors and all that, and I feel like it happens every year, but you just got to let it play out.
Yeah, full control, meaning you can decline any of that.
Yes.
If it is Houston that's interested, would you go back?
Well, that's not something that's, I don't think it's serious right now. So we'll see where everything goes. But, you know, my goal has always been to be here and win here. And, I've been talking to Derek and Rocco, and I'll be ready for the next series. So,
have you ever had to veto a trade before?
No.
Is it frustrating being in the position that you're going to have to talk about, considering where the team is at right now and the position that you guys are in?
No, it's part of the job. It's part of the job and everything that comes with it. You got to embrace and you got to be available. So it's just part of it. You know, one thing that I really...
Well, you know what, Ben? We're good. I don't care how he feels about that part of it.
Shut up, Carlos.
Yeah, I don't care how he feels about the Twins. Could care less about the Twins.
We know.
Footage to prove it. Yes, I'm not a big fan of Minnesota.
Epic video footage to prove it.
Go back, July of last year. I don't know how you feel about Correa. Like, this again, this is one of those things where in baseball, when you consider salaries, it doesn't make for great sports talk radio answers if you're being honest with the audience. Would I want Carlos Correa on this baseball team? In a blanket, if contracts didn't exist, if these were just sandlot games.
Right.
Yes, I'd like to have Carlos Correa playing third base for this team next to Jeremy Peña, who hit a home run last night in Sugarland, by the way. Should be back soon. I would love that. Do I want Carlos Correa with 3 years at $32 million a year left on his contract? No, I do not. So there's got to be a middle ground. What's the price if they were to make a trade? I'm guessing the prospect price would not be much if the Twins are in salary dump mode.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's assume that we're okay with whatever prospects are prospects. Drew Gilbert just got traded yesterday. Everybody's up in arms when he was part of the Verlander trade 2 years ago. If the Twins are willing to pick up like half the salary, like the Mets were with Verlander, sure. Let's roll. Let's do it. We'll find a spot for Carlos Correa the next few years at $18 million a year instead of 32. They offered him $32 million a year back in 2021 in the offseason, and thank God he didn't take it. He hasn't lived up to that amount.
And to be clear, you're talking about half the salary for the remainder of his contract.
Yeah. He'd be here 3 more years after.
So not just, you know, half the salary this year, but half the salary period.
Yeah.
We don't want to pay Carlos Correa the sticker price that Minnesota decided to pay him, because the logic still applies to the reason why you didn't sign him to begin with.
Yeah.
And it seems like you're on the right side of history of that decision, given how things worked out with Jeremy Peña and how things have worked out for Carlos Correa being up and down in Minnesota. You feel good enough about that decision already.
Yes.
So absent of this financial compromise that you're talking about, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do.
Correct.
You know, because I mean, I think you would be conceding. You would concede right now that you're on the right side of that decision.
I'll put it this way. If he had accepted that five-year, $160 million contract back in the offseason after the 2021 season, A, we don't know if the Astros win the World Series in 2022, because the entire world changes after that.
Right.
Peña was the MVP of the ALCS and the World Series that year. But just in a vacuum, Correa's performance, independent of how the team has done, that would not be a contract where you will, if the results had been the exact same in terms of number of games played, because he was injured. He finally made the All-Star team again last year, and then he got injured, and he played 86 games. If Correa had signed for 5 years, $132 million, heading into 2022, we would be talking about that thus far as a bad not a bad contract, because the team would probably still be pretty good, but a contract where Carlos will would not have lived up to the value of that deal. There's a reason the Twins are wanting to dump him. That's what he's been making in Minnesota,
right?
About $30 million a year. And I don't know if they want to dump him, but it sounds like they're taking the phone calls about Carlos Correa. I can tell you right now, if he were an all-star, then he might be on the block, but he wouldn't be talked about like, well, they got to pick up part of his salary, and we'll probably only have to give up a mid-level prospect. He would be doing a Juan Soto deal where he's getting seven prospects in return.
Oh, you can hear from the tone of his answers. Like, he handles that really well, and we know Carlos Correa is a professional, not just baseball, but, like, you know, PR. Like, he presents really well.
Oh, yeah.
But you can hear in the tone of that answer where he starts it with, well, I've got full control.
Yeah.
And it seems like this comes up every year. Like, he's feeling a little bit and understands that there's probably a little bit of, if not buyer's remorse, some, you know, at least on their side, some underachieving on his end on what they were probably expecting when they got Carlos Correa, as good as he is.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, but also to be fair to your kind of the picture that you paint there, you got to provide the context of, okay, well, now you don't have Alex Bregman anymore like you did when Carlos Correa left.
Yeah.
You also don't have Isak Paredes right now like you did, let's say, 2 weeks ago. So, like, that is a part of the equation.
You are in need right now.
It's why he's appealing now as opposed to being appealing as a free agent for the sticker price that he went for in Minnesota.
Correct. All right, we'll do some headlines. The Astros do win yesterday, 9-1 over the Nationals. We'll dig into those results. Some rehab performances in Sugarland that we need to hit because these are significant. It's deadline day as well. We got some NFL news that we'll get to as well. No Texans training camp practice today. We're in studio. We're back out there tomorrow. Stay there. Headlines up next. Payne and Pendergast. B. Scott in for Seth Payne.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, let's get to headlines. The Texans, no training camp today. No practice. I'm sure the guys are in the building. But no practice today. We're live in studio. Brandon Scott in for Seth Payne. Seth will be back tomorrow. And it's been a lively 3 days of practice in pads the last 3 days this week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Day three got a little chippy towards the end of practice. Here was D'Amico Ryans on the tone of day seven of Texans training camp.
Yeah, right now, as we're coming in, it's the third day of pads. Anytime you have 3 days of pads, it's going to get chippy. Guys are sore. Guys are beat up. That's training camp, so it's expected. Guys get a little chippy at times, but also just keeping it confined, not letting it get out of hand. Thought guys did a good job of that.
All right, so the defense won the day yesterday. The defense, and I would say more often than not, when these practices have involved competitive periods, the defense has done more winning than the offense. Although, you know, we didn't get to dig much into C.J. Stroud in the open, Brandon, because we ran out of time. But I think C.J.'s been up and down in this camp, but there's been enough good from C.J. considering 80% of his offensive line is brand new to him. Titus Howard is the only mainstay. And even Titus isn't playing a position that C.J. is used to having him play. So in some ways, it's like he's got five new starters in front of him here. If we're taking actual position into account, he's going against one of the best defenses in football, and he's doing all of this while trying to install a new system where he is in more control at the line of scrimmage. I think taking all those things into account, I think it's right where I would expect C.J. Stroud to be, and I would say he's ahead of where I would expect most other quarterbacks to be.
Yeah, it's not excuses, and I don't think it's just like trying to paint a favorable picture for C.J., but I do think it's just like fair to point out that a lot of the issues that you see from the offense out there is not like singularly a C.J. Stroud thing, which is why all of this is so important, right? It's not good enough to just have what you think is an elite quarterback. You need everything around him to work out, the system, the offensive line. And it's all of these things that are still coming together that impact C.J. Stroud's performance. I wonder, like, if you were to just not to go and just kind of look from afar, if you hear, oh, C.J. Stroud or the quarterbacks threw however many interceptions that they've been throwing over the last three padded practices, you might think, oh, well, the quarterbacks must be having a rough go of it out there. And it's like, well, no, you got to have the context of how good the defense is, how new the offense is, and how much that they're still trying to figure out on the fly. Like, the things that are wrong with the offense don't feel like they're C.J. Stroud at this point.
No, and CJ's had some bad snaps that have been his fault, but it's not been an overabundance. Davis Mills, that was actually his first bad day yesterday. He threw two pick sixes. He's been really good throughout camp.
Even Keaton Slovis. Like they, at times, like you know, whenever the quarterbacks themselves isolated, you don't look. You know, and we've had these kind of training camps where you go out there and you're like, whoa, this quarterback situation,
dude. Even
it doesn't look like that now.
Graham Mertz has had like one good play each practice. Like I've a 6th round rookie coming off a knee injury, cool. I'll take it.
Yeah.
They're back at it tomorrow. They're in West Virginia next week. Seth and I will be in West Virginia covering the team. So very much looking forward to that. Astros win yesterday 9-1 over the Nationals. Here was the big blow that gave them some separation early in the game.
Altuve skies one to left. All the way back is Wood. He is looking up. He's watching a 3-run home run. 4-1 Astros, Altuve, number 18 on the year.
Okay, so 9-1 the final score. Not much to dig into in that game. It was a rout. Astros needed that win. They're off today.
Four hits for Altuve, though, right?
That was 4 hits for Altuve.
Yeah, so I mean, not that that's a major deal. He's Jose Altuve. He's done this before, but it's always good to see Jose Altuve have a big day.
As up and down as the Astros have been throughout the month of July and as depleted as they are roster-wise right now, Altuve had a great July.
Yeah.
He was at the top of the American League or near the top in a lot of different stats. So Altuve is getting it done right now. The trade deadline is today at 5 o'clock. By the way, the Astros 5 games up over the Mariners and the Rangers. They're tied for 2nd in the division right now. Appropriate to bring up the Mariners because they made a big deal overnight. Eugenio Suarez is once again a Seattle Mariner. This is amidst a season where he's among the top home run hitters in baseball, so they get a big bat for the middle of their lineup. The Astros make a trade. They trade for Ramon Urias from the Baltimore Orioles, a very good defensive third baseman, a gold glover a few years ago, who is a competent big league bat. We'll see if that's all they do at third base before 5 o'clock today, I should say. Twine Palmer is who they sent out in that deal, a minor league pitcher who I just get a kick out of his name. I don't think he's real.
Who might be a country music artist, who might be in the rodeo.
Yeah, we don't know.
Who might be in Major League Baseball.
But apparently he is at the very least a middling minor league pitcher worthy of sending to the Orioles for a mid-level infielder. Rehab starts at Sugar Land last night. Christian Javier, the numbers aren't great. But he did hit 93 on the gun. 3 1/3 innings last night for Javier. 2 hits. Control appeared to be the problem because he only gave up 2 hits, but he walked 4 guys, struck out 3, did give up 3 runs. He threw 64 pitches, topped out at 93 miles an hour. The scuttlebutt on Javier feels like there's still another rehab start left for him maybe before he comes back up. I can't tell. I can never tell with this stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, if his command's all over the place, then I feel good about that, right? Like
about him getting another start.
Yeah, let's let him figure it out. Yeah. I mean, think about it, Sean. He's got to be, at least for me, the most intriguing of the possible reinforcements that they have that are not named Yordan Alvarez. If we're just focusing on the pitchers, he's easily the most intriguing of the possible in-house reinforcements that the Astros have. Period.
He's the only one with a proven elite level ceiling.
There you go.
2022 Javier was elite. I mean, it's and I'm not just tossing that word around. He was great in 2022.
And I do this, I get excited about this without trying to put that level of anticipation on it. Like, I don't want to think of, hey, am I going to get the prime invisible Christian Javier back? But if I can get some facsimile of it added to this mix, I would take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, you get 80% of peak Javier from 2022 back, and he's better than these minor league guys you're trotting out there. Jeremy Pena hit a home run last night in Sugar Land, so that was good to see.
This is the band that I really want to get back together.
Yes.
The injured Astros, not the departed Astros.
No, not Correa.
The injured Astros.
Verlander.
That's the band that I want to get back
together. Yes,
those are the songs I want to hear.
Correa, Verlander. Josh Reddick still lives in town. Why
that's
don't we
right.
get him to play right field? Yeah,
he's over in the there in the Space City Home
shade?
Network Studios, probably somewhere just chilling.
Why did I do a drive by on Josh Reddick? Just now? I like Josh Reddick.
Josh didn't do
that
anything
was
to us.
Marwin, hey, what's Marwin up to?
I know
days?
Marwin's available.
I want Marwin. Remember they brought Marwin back a couple years ago, just basically sit on the bench like a mascot.
What's Yuli doing? Where's Yuli?
Oh,
where's Yuli at?
That's the one right there. I would
Come
be willing.
Man.
You know
Where's
what? I'd be willing
at?
To take up like a third of the 26-man roster just with guys. It feels good to have them around.
Yes.
Why is that guy? I've worked in companies like that. Like, why is that guy still working here? I just like having him around.
Yeah, man.
That's what the CEO would say to me. I like having the guy around.
He's a good hang.
Yeah, yeah. That's the goal, kids. When you get older someday, be the guy that's fun to hang around.
Yeah.
You'll stay employed.
100%.
Micah Parsons and the Cowboys still not close to a deal, according to Adam Schefter. In fact, they are going backwards is what the word on the street is.
Oh, well, we didn't see that coming at all. Man. That's the most surprising thing ever.
Do you think that the Cowboys even want to keep Micah Parsons after this coming season?
I mean, I've got a hard time believing that they wouldn't. I mean, Micah Parsons is a lot. He's a lot of things, but he's also really, really good, man. He's so good.
It's
hard to imagine that they wouldn't want to keep that guy.
Whatever contract you're going to give him, and it's going to sound like I'm sticking up for the Cowboys. I'm not. I'm just trying to propose scenarios here because he is a lot. And we've heard rumblings from up in Dallas that over the last couple years that the Cowboys wouldn't be all that upset if Micah were no longer part of the team moving forward.
I get it.
I just think Micah's handled his business overall pretty well when it comes to this contract. Like the players at the level of Micah Parsons are all getting paid way earlier than Micah Parsons is way earlier than Micah Parsons is not getting paid right now. So it's a little flabbergasting to me, but just to play devil's advocate for a second. If you give Micah Parsons a big contract, it's going to be at least 4 years maybe on top of this year. So do you look at it and go, okay, we might be starting to get into the years where all the extra that comes with Micah Parsons might not be worth the trouble or the money?
Yeah, I mean, it's a thought, and especially when they've already now paid. Like, there is some validity to what Jerry Jones is talking about in some of the previous contracts that they've already given out. Micah Parsons might be the best player out of all of these guys, maybe outside of CeeDee Lamb. Like, you could maybe make an argument there, but not like this is the last guy to pay, and he might be the best one. So it's the damnedest thing. You end up paying Dak Prescott, you end up paying Trevon Diggs, but Micah Parsons is the one that you're like.
They're tight end a 4 year deal a couple days ago.
Ferguson, but Micah Parsons is where you draw the line. Like, I know he's a lot, but from Micah Parsons' side though, you talk about him handling it well. He's a David Mulugeta client.
He is.
He knows he's going to get paid somewhere in some form or fashion.
Yep. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. B. Scott in for Seth Payne. Hall of Fame game tonight, by the way. We get football tonight. Our long national nightmare is over. We get football. It's already that time. Thursdays with football, college or pro, now until well into January. So that's fun. All right, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. I'm going to pose a question to B. Scott that I posed to John Harris yesterday and Mark Vandermeer. And I've got a poll up that's split right down the middle on this question. And it has to do with the Texans' first 5 games of the year. And also we're going to hear from C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who I think is just based on what I'm seeing out of camp and the press conferences yesterday, this might be a whole lot more fun than even I anticipated. And I loved C.J. Gardner-Johnson going into this training camp. So we'll hear from him. Coming up next.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Payne and Pendergast, Brandon Scott in for Seth Payne today. I'm just watching the video of Austin Wells of the Yankees wandering off second base last night because he thought there were 3 outs in the Yankees loss.
That's one of those want to get away moments right there. Remember the Southwest Airline commercials that used to be the want to get away?
Oh, yeah.
That would definitely be one.
Yeah, the game was tied at 3, so they didn't lose the game, but it was the bottom of the 9th inning. I have no idea if the Yankees went on to win or lose the game. I'm just watching this video clip of Austin Wells. There were only 2 outs. He was on first base. Guy tries to bunt and get on. They throw him out at first. Austin Wells moves over to second, but thinks there's three outs, so he starts walking back to the dugout. And the guys on there, who are they playing here? The Braves, I think?
No, I think the Rays.
The Rays? Okay, the Tampa Bay Rays, they're playing the Rays. That's right. And just tags him. And I'd like to sit here and make fun of him, but I could see at least three or four guys on the Astros doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Definitely could see Jose Altuve wandering off second base.
Yeah. I mean, you got to lock in, but you could see it.
Jake Myers, 100%, I could see.
Yes.
And I feel like Chaz might have done that at some point. Chaz is another kind of spacey base runner as well.
Yeah, I would say Jose and Chaz are firmly planted at the top of this list of guys who would do. And then they got a bunch of young guys, right? They got like rookies on the team.
Yeah.
Where you can see it happening with any of those. Okay. But out of the name brand guys, it would be those.
Now you're doing something. This is one of my pet peeves. I promise I'm going to get to what I tease in a second. One of my pet peeves is when people blame like basic baseball things and they call it a rookie mistake.
Fair enough.
No, you've been running the bases since you were 7 years old. That's like wandering off second base is not a rookie mistake. That's a dumb person mistake.
Yeah, but I also feel like it's a lack of focus mistake. So maybe it could be like you're just not that mature. It's fair enough, okay, though. Like you should already know how to run the bases long before you get to the major leagues. Right. I will give you that. But I just mean in terms of lack of maturity or lack of focus.
I get
the rookie's more likely to be hung over or, you know, thinking about something else that he ain't got no business thinking about in the middle of the game.
Way out over our
I'm just saying.
More likely to be hung over.
We've been young men before.
You were the captain of the debate team back in the day, I can tell.
I'm just saying. And right. I also was.
I'm anxious to hear your answer to this question.
Okay.
We're going to hear from C.J. Gardner-Johnson in just a second. Sean Pendergast, Brandon Scott with you here. Appreciate you tuning in. I asked John Harris this yesterday when he was on with me, Mark Vandermeer as well. I did a little bit of Texans radio with them, first segment, jumped in with them a little bit yesterday. I put up a poll about this question as well. I'll tell you the results in just a second. But here's the question. The Texans' first five games of the season, heading into the week six bye week, and I think a bye week being at week six is significant in this, are at the Rams, home for Tampa on Monday night, two playoff teams, at Jacksonville, home for Tennessee, a couple division games, and then at Baltimore. Your arch nemesis in so much as you can't, not only have you not been able to beat them since D'Amico Ryan's arrived here, they've beaten you like a drum every time you've played, right? You lost in the playoffs to them convincingly. You lost in C.J. Stroud's first game ever, the opener in 2023, fairly convincingly. We know that Christmas last year was the worst Christmas ever because you lost 31-2.
Yeah, that one was an embarrassment.
To the Ravens. That was an embarrassment. So my question is this. Through the first five games, you have two choices of results through the first five games. Would you rather the Texans go 4-1 with the one loss being a standard garden variety convincing loss to the Ravens? The typical type of stuff. So you went 4-0 to start the season. But then the Ravens remind you that they're still your daddies.
Yeah.
Or would you rather go 3-2, not as good a record, but one of those three wins is a win where you go into Baltimore and not just win on a last-second field goal, but you're controlling the game in the fourth quarter. So these are convincing wins by either the Ravens or the Texans. So 4-1 with a convincing loss to the Ravens, or 3-2 with a convincing win over the Ravens, again, going into a bye week where you're not going to be sitting for a couple weeks stewing on whatever the result of that game was.
So as a longtime radio host and noted pollster, and as the radio host that presented this segment, you will be proud to know that I spent more time sitting with this question than I should have.
Yeah.
Than a responsible adult should sit around mulling over this question,
which is
a good job, a reflection of a good job by you.
Thank you. Well, that's all I want is for people to think.
Yes.
Yeah, I just want people to sit and think.
I spent way more time than I should have thinking about this question because it is like the hypothetical and some of the qualifiers in there they're interesting enough for you to think about where the team is in that space, right? Like what does this say about the team? That's the big part of it. Not just the record, because obviously 4-1 is better than 3-2. Like we don't need we can do math, right? But what does it say about the team? How are you talking about the team? What's the context around it? All of that matters in how you answer this question.
This is a battle of math versus narratives.
Now, I think I'm still going to go with the math here after thinking about this for a really long time. So I'm not doing the lazy thing, Sean, where I'm like, well, of course I want to be 4-1.
I'm getting a lot of that.
I'm not doing that thing, but I do eventually land there. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. I have to think about, okay, so if I'm 3-2 but beat the Ravens, that means that I did lose two games against somebody else,
it
right?
It means it's some combination of those first four. It is a 100% mathematical fact that if you're 3-2 to start the season and one of those wins is over the Ravens, it means that you have either lost a division game, maybe two.
Yep.
Or
you lost the first two games of the season.
You lost the first two games, which includes the home opener on Monday night.
Right.
You've definitely lost either a division game or the Monday night home opener, which would be a big bummer. The Rams game, they're underdogs in that game, and I'd be disappointed if they lost, and I think they can win that game. But if they go to L.A. and they lose 27-20 in the opener, it's not the end of the world. The Rams are one of the better teams you play, and you're playing them on the road. Those next three games, though, the fact that Bucks are a good team, but the fact that it's at home, it's the opener, and any loss to the Jags or the Titans hurts. So again, like, that's where you start to think about the business you and I are in. Like, if you start the season 0-2. Or if you start the season, you would, by definition, be starting the season 2-2.
You would have to, yep.
So there'd be some sketchy weeks on the radio there. Whereas 4-0, you're riding high for a month, and then the Ravens come in and just kick you in the nuts.
And to be clear, I'm cool with the sketchy weeks on the radio and us having stuff to talk about and everything not necessarily being copacetic with the record. Like, I'm okay with that part of it, like from the radio standpoint. But as somebody that does want good for the team, I don't think I'm okay with any of those combinations of losses, right? So I don't want to lose to both division opponents. I don't want to lose the first two games. I think the only thing I'd be okay with maybe would be a split between, like, losing one of the division games and losing the opener against the Rams.
Okay.
You know, if it were to happen.
Yeah.
But even in that scenario, I don't think I want to lose to the division opponent.
Okay, yeah, and again, this is now we're going down a rabbit hole, because now I start to think, okay, if you have to lose one of those division games to start the season, is it at the Jags where you'd be snapping your road winning streak in the division?
I do not want to lose to the Jags.
But do you want to lose to the Titans at home again?
I do not want to lose to the Titans.
Right.
So those are the teams now, and the Colts used to be this, but those are the teams now that I kind of hate the most in the division.
Way in. So far, 4-1 is getting the lion's share on the text page.
Yeah, it's 4-1 for me, but not just because of the math, because of the opponents and the teams that you play before that and the combination of losses that would be there.
I understand. I get it. I know what that 2 weeks afterwards, that Ravens game would be like.
It would be great.
If they won that game, it would be great, and you'd feel amazing going into a chunk of the schedule where you go to Seattle and then you got three straight home games after that in weeks 8, 9, and 10.
Yeah.
The 4-1 scenario, that would be the most fun first month of the season that maybe we've had ever. 4-0 against the Rams and the Bucks, two good teams, and then two division wins in weeks 3 and 4.
Give me that.
But then I don't know if I can do 2 weeks of same old Texans radio after getting beaten like a drum by the Ravens.
Do you think that's what we would do, Sean, if you start off?
It's not what I would do. I'm talking about what the audience, the interaction would be like. I'm telling you right now, if they go 4-0 to start the season and then they get thumped by the Ravens, there will be a lot of same. They're not unanimous. I'm just saying it'll be out there.
Yeah, but even as we sit here, okay, it's the end of July. It's July 31st as we sit here right now. We can say, let's just be honest about this.
Yeah.
These first five games that we're talking about, what would be the least surprising result if we're honest about it?
Losing at the Ravens.
It would be losing at the Ravens out of all the five games. And so if you go in there, now those other ones could go either way. They're division games. They're against good teams and the Rams and the Bucks. If you win pick'ems, four pick'ems, and then lose the one game that we all thought you were going to lose anyway, I feel like reasonable minds would have to be able to accept that, and I feel like we would for the most part.
The poll is up on my social media, at Sean T. Pendergast. Brandon's retweeted it on the station's account, at Sports Radio 610. All right, let's play the little guessing game that Seth and I like to play when I put up a poll like this. Who do you think, what result? I'm on the text page right now, 4-1 seems to be winning. So someone says 5-0 now. I'm exhausted listening to this. You all lost me for the morning. Oh, get out of here. Who do you think is winning this poll right now?
Yeah, I think smartasses probably have the 4-1 winning it. But It's not winning.
It's not winning.
Okay,
no,
let's go.
No, let's go. 3-2
Okay.
52.5% of the people say they just want to slay the beast and go 3-2 the Ravens.
Yeah. I think that's being, in part, being a beaten and battered franchise by the Ravens. It speaks a lot to what the Ravens have done, the history that you laid out in the beginning of the segment.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot of what's going on there.
I would rather go 10-7 and deep into the playoffs, possibly a Super Bowl, than go 12-5 and be 1-done in the playoffs. Well, duh. Yeah, of course.
At what point was that as?
It wasn't. It's the people that present options that aren't on the poll that frustrate me.
I mean, yeah, me too. Like, I agree with the texture, but I just don't understand.
I'd rather go 8-9 and go to the Super Bowl than go 14-3 and get knocked out in the first round. Yes, it's all about the playoffs. Yeah. And the one fair point I'm seeing here is that if it's about the playoffs, 4-1 puts you in a better position to get at least the 1 or 2 seed. I'd rather be 4-1. I can listen to that.
Let me give you another side.
I chose 3-2.
I'll give you another side, though, to this.
Yeah.
And you, as a Texans historian, will appreciate this.
Okay.
And this isn't like deep history. This is recent history. It's not like beating them really says that much about, like, it. We'll do a lot of radio on it and hey, what does this mean for the Texans getting this monkey off their back sort of thing? We'll have those conversations.
Yeah.
But it's not like you haven't seen the Texans, let's say, beat the Chiefs in the regular season and then get up on them 24-0 in the postseason and then lose to them.
I had some people present that to me.
Yeah, so
that,
like that's there too. The ultimate get back against the Ravens is not going to be, as much as I would like for them to win that game.
Yeah.
It's not going to be week 5 at the Ravens. It's going to be the divisional round or the AFC championship game, wherever it is that they meet.
Well, I can tell you right now, if they lose to the Ravens in week 5, the narrative going into the playoffs is going to be, you've got to be somewhere where the Ravens aren't on the bracket. You know what I mean? You got to find somebody to do your dirty work for you. I'm not saying they can't beat them. That's what people are going to be saying about that game.
Yeah, but I honestly think that that's fair until it actually happens.
Yeah.
Like, even if they beat them, okay, we can have a different conversation. But all of that feels fair until they slay the dragon in the playoffs.
Good question, man. I'm proud of myself. This poll's been split like right around, like it's hovering right around a pick 'em, right around 50-50 the whole time.
I sat with this, it like just in my head for at least 30 minutes.
It's what like it means for those first, it's almost about what it means for the other 4 games and the possibilities as much as it is that Ravens game. Either way, that is a fun first month plus of the season.
Yeah.
That's a fun schedule, man. 2 prominent NFC teams, including a Monday night game, 2 division games, and then the Ravens in Baltimore?
I honestly was excited enough for it, but thinking about it in this way and in this context got me even more excited for the first 5 to 6 weeks of the season.
Yep. You know who thinks this is a Super Bowl caliber team?
Who's that?
C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Mm. I've been on a lot of good Super Bowl contending teams. I've been on one Super Bowl winning team. I think, let's talk about the contending teams. They all have one thing in common. They're hungry. They're ready to continue to work. And I don't want to lay out of bed or say anything to put anything out there, but this is a Super Bowl team right here. Super Bowl caliber team. You guys just go out there and show it week in, week out, and then start from practice. Start from meetings. Everybody's a Super Bowl contending team because we all high caliber players in the NFL. So we go out there and compete. We got to understand who's next to us, who's across the ball, and we got to understand that this is a job for us. We got to get it done.
I'm not saying this affects my handicap on the Texan season at all, but his isn't. His opinion, C.J. Gardner-Johnson's, when it comes to something like this, the potential of this team, is one that matters to me more than other guys. He's been on a contender or an actual champion the last 3 seasons.
Yeah, like literally fresh off a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Champagne fresh off his breath. Not literally.
He's got his ring like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, so he understands and knows it. I just like how he's like, I ain't going to say too much or put too much on this team. But this is a Super Bowl caliber team. Like, he's like, I'm going to stop just short of winning the Super Bowl or going to the Super Bowl.
There's nothing left.
But we could, though.
And we might cure cancer.
Yeah.
We might, while we're at it, we might cure cancer.
Does not every team, we know this because we've seen teams that are not like this, but most teams usually go into it feeling like, oh, this is a Super Bowl caliber team. Like, a lot of teams say that.
Seth says
especially ones that have gone to the playoffs recently.
Seth talks about that a lot. He says the one thing that all 32 teams have at this time of year, all 32 teams are diluting themselves into something at this point of the year. You know, like everybody's got hope.
I mean, I remember the 2021 Texans being righteously indignant about being counted out. Well, and we saw why.
And then they blew out Jacksonville in week one. They did, and they're like, see?
We told you.
And it didn't hold up.
Philip Lindsay's in there like, how dare you?
A week later, David Culley's declining penalties for the right to punt on fourth down. You know,
was that the Patriots game?
It was the Browns.
Browns game, yeah.
Yeah, it was the Browns in week two. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
What a fever dream that season was, man.
Yeah, but at training camp.
Oh, yeah.
How dare they count us out?
Everybody's believing, man. Yeah. Everybody's believing.
But to C.J. Gardner-Johnson and to his point, I think he's right.
Yeah.
I think he's right in terms of the talent and the potential. There are just some obvious things that we already know about that have to come together that we have real questions about.
Yeah.
And until we get those answers, we won't know how close they are to be. I've said this. They are at least what they've been. Are they more than what they've been? That's the question.
I think it's going to be a really good pickup, the C.J. Gardner-Johnson pickup. Just watching his energy. I mean, he is a definite line straddler when it comes to physicality out of training camp.
Yep.
His level of thud is more thuddier than other people's level of thud. Thud is that you're just allowed to kind of bump guys and like you can hit him up, but you can't bring him to the ground.
It's his edge.
Yeah, yeah. And think about where they would be with Jimmy Ward out, both injured and with his legal situation. I don't know who'd be running with the ones right now at the safety position.
Probably MJ Stewart.
It'd probably be MJ Stewart, who's really a special teams journeyman type. Exactly. They might have signed somebody else had they not made the C.J. Gardner-Johnson trade. They might have picked up, but it wouldn't have picked up anybody as good as C.J. Gardner-Johnson is the thing if he weren't here. You know, there might be another body here, but it wouldn't be as productive a player as he's been. He's got 12, 13 interceptions over the last couple of years. Here is C.J. Gardner-Johnson on how he's acclimating to Houston.
Football started with Houston, so I'm here with a new chapter of my life. Like I said, I closed a chapter of my life with Philly when I went to ring ceremony. I did everything we could do. Now I'm here, ready to play football with Houston Texans. Focus on my new teammates. I can't. That's the past. The more I sit and think about what happened, I will never be the best version of myself for this team here. So I'm happy. My family's happy. We're all good and ready to continue to go out here. Have fun.
Dude, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, it's wild. It feels like he's had to address more questions about places he's left than even Stephon Diggs did last year.
Yeah.
And Stephon Diggs is a guy who left his previous two stops with the bridge smoldering, you know?
Well, the thing is that C.J. Gardner-Johnson is just a step below probably like household name, you know, superstar type of player. But he does seem too good to be on the move as frequently as he is. So it does seem like that's part of the reason why he's there. It's like, you know what? You're just a little too good to always be available. What's that about?
It's a great point because Diggs, it takes 4 years to tire of him, it would appear, in the past, whereas C.J. Gardner-Johnson's on a new team every year.
Yeah, it's 1 to 2
literally
years.
Literally every year.
Yeah. It's like, and to your point, it's usually a really good team that wants to have him, but also the really good team that wants to see him go.
I think this is the first time. I'm going to go out on a limb. I think this is going to be the first time in like 6 years that C.J. Gardner-Johnson comes back to the same team.
Oh, it's early.
Years in a row. It's a limb I'm out on right
now. It's early, buddy.
I'm not going to sit here and wait for 8 weeks worth of data, man. I'm going to go out on a limb right now. One more from C.J. Gardner-Johnson. He says he was on a champion last year, and now he's chasing a ring.
It didn't, because I don't play for them no more. I ain't defending nothing. I'm actually chasing it now. I'm hungry, like you said. They're prey. Like, I gotta go hunt them. Like, they're champions. When you're a champion of something, you become the prey to a lot of predators. So there's no shot at them. It's just, you gotta understand, like, when you switch sides of the ball, switch roles, I gotta go hunt again. What kind of predator are you? I don't sleep. I feel like coming here, I gotta get better. As a man, as a teammate, father. And whatever these teams call me to do, I'm here to put my best foot forward.
For a guy who's on a different team every year, he's very self-aware.
Yeah.
Did you watch him on the Pivot podcast?
Yeah, I did. I thought
he was excellent.
No, he's self-aware. He's insightful. But he also is that person, though. It seems like whether you're interviewing him or just having a conversation with him, you ever be around people that, like, you're just poking and prodding just to get them to talk more, just because you want to keep hearing them talk?
Yeah.
You know, like, so you're just asking them questions because you're kind of looking around the room, smiling like, what else is the guy going to say?
Well, yeah.
He's one of those kind of people in conversation.
Yes.
Like, let's just keep talking. Let's just keep this thing going because who knows what might come out of this guy's mouth.
He's going to say something. Yeah, for sure. I'm excited to have him on the team.
Yeah.
A lot of people weighing in. on the 3-2 and beat the Ravens versus 4-1 and lose to the Ravens question. 4-1 seems to still be kind of winning on the text page. It's losing on my Pender poll that I put up. But people are making great points on the reasons behind both. 3-2, this is a case for 3-2. And if you're just getting in your car, I put up an either or. One of these two scenarios, these are the only two you can choose. 4-1 to start the season, but lose to the Ravens convincingly going into the bye week. Or 3-2 to start the season, but you beat the Ravens convincingly going into the bye week.
Both cool scenarios, by the way.
I'd take either one.
Just to be clear, but we're not fence straddling. We're picking one.
Take either one. And for those of you weighing in saying 5-0, yes, I'd rather go 5-0. But it's thank you for pointing out that. I really appreciate everybody pointing out that 5-0 is a better
very,
record than
very smart.
4-1. Very yeah. smart. This was a good case, I thought, for 3-2, which is the one I chose. Bad start with a new line and a new OC would be understandable. Being good enough to beat the Ravens is a good sign for the overall season.
Nah, I can take that.
That last part is the only reason I'm picking 3-2. The first part of that answer is a great reason to rationalize the 2-2 to start the season, which is, hey, a lot of new moving parts on offense. You know, I don't think they're going to lose shootouts. You know, like I don't know that teams are scoring 30 on this defense, you know?
Yeah, well, this is also, I like the logic here from the texter because it's also why I nitpicked the, okay, because we can't straddle the fence here, but which games am I losing, right? Yeah. You know, I did that whole game because it's like, okay, if I can accept losing to the Rams, all right, I don't want to lose Monday night at home, but if you're telling me, hey, we're slow playing our way into being the team that we're going to be.
I don't know, man. The coming in the Tuesday after an 0-2 start is not something I would look forward to.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't.
There's no good scenario of 2-2. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I obviously don't want to lose the home opener. I don't want to lose. And I don't want to be 0-2.
Yeah.
So, okay, that means I'm losing a division game.
Yeah.
But if you're telling me I'm getting better through that process and through getting better in that, I showed you by beating the Ravens,
yep.
Then yeah, I'm interested in that. Now, so, yeah, it's an interesting question.
It is, yeah, yeah. Keep weighing in. 713-572-4610 is the text page. So you saw the thing with ESPN this week that did they rated the under 25-year-old cores definitely. Of NFL teams. And for the second straight year, the Texans are number one in that exercise, which I'm largely fueled by C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson, but they point out Derek Stingley Jr., blue chip player. He's going to age out of under 25 this year. But Kamari Lassiter, they gave a lot of love to in that article. They also pointed out that there's a lot of pieces in this rookie class that are promising. I was thinking about this yesterday after rereading that article again. The rookies, and it's training camp, and some of these rookies are going against twos, not ones. Now, Jaden Higgins has been getting his fair share of work, working against twos and ones. Ariante Ursery is the number one right tackle now, so he's working against Will Anderson Jr. and Daniil Hunter on like 90% of the snaps out there. This, so far, so good. We get asked about a lot of things out of camp. How's CJ doing? How's the offensive line look? How's the defense look? We get people asking about the rookies. I think probably not as many questions just because for the second straight year, they don't have a rookie that was a high pick where, you know, like where they had CJ and Will and they had Stingley before that. And even Kenyon Green was a first round pick. I will tell you this, if you're wondering how the rookie class is doing, I would say it's absolutely so far so good. I mean, Jaden Higgins is making plays out there that are NFL plays. You know, not only in OTAs and minicamp, he was making plays. He's making catches. He made a toe tapper on the sidelines the other day, contested. That was an outstanding catch. Ursary is running with the ones right now. I think that unto itself. Granted, running with the ones in an offensive line room that's in complete rebuild mode. But he's had his fair share of decent reps for a guy who's in first week of training camp going against two Pro Bowlers. Jalen Knowles made some nice plays in camp. Like both receivers from Iowa State have looked like they belong. Jalen Smith, the DB out of USC, has had a bunch of pass breakups in team drills. Woody Marks and Jawar Jordan. I know Jawar's not a rookie, but he kind of is because he didn't make the team last year, and now he's back. This is the first training camp where he's really getting some reps.
And he would have been an older rookie, but I would almost lump him into this just since he hasn't really played.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting reps with the twos. That wasn't happening last year.
Yeah.
But Woody Marks, specifically, the rookie out of USC, is really taking advantage of the reps that have been vacated by Joe Mixon and Damian Pierce being out. And even the day three guy, like Graham Mertz, is making a I'm not saying Mertz fact. If Mertz is factoring into this season, then it's been a horrible season.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons, but for a 6-round guy they drafted, he makes a throw or two every camp. Jalen Reed, 6-round safety, had a pick six yesterday. You know, Luke Lachey is a 7th-round tight end. He's made a few plays here and there. Those are the day three guys. You're not relying on them. You are relying, I think, on Jaden Higgins.
Yes.
You are clearly relying on Ariante Ursary. You are relying on Jalen Knoll, who might get reps returning kicks too. He's been amongst the guys doing that. And he's the only one returning kicks in practice, B. Scott, that's not a bubble guy. Like, he's going to make the team. The rest of them are bubble guys. Jalen Smith, like, that's the one. Like, a lot of people said, hey, Jalen Smith, you know, I had him down as a day three guy, and the Texans took him in the 3rd round. Well, the Texans aren't afraid to draft guys where they feel they should be. And he looks like he's belonged so far. Like, so far, so good with the rookies.
And I would add that Jalen Smith feels like a guy. Like, I know when we say rely on, we're usually talking about starters and guys who are contributing heavily. But you do rely on your depth to a large degree, right? Like, it's not like we haven't seen the corners miss time before. We understand Derek Stingley Jr.'s injury history. I know he was healthy last year. But this was a question. We talked about this. This is a question about the team going in. And it's like, okay, where is their secondary depth, particularly cornerback? What does that look like? You know, so why they were signing guys off the street well into the offseason, right? Just, you know, leading up to training camp. What does their depth look like? Oh, you might have drafted a piece. That, to me, is, you know, speaks to a reliability if you're feeling good about him coming through training camp, or as you get through training camp, if Jalen Smith is somebody that you feel like, hey, if something happens to one of my corners and I got to throw him out there, or if I want to have a more traditional slot corner in there, and, you know, like, maybe I use Jalen Petrie as an extra linebacker, or I want to run dime packages or whatever it is, here's a guy that I can rely on. That, to me, is a pretty big development when we're talking about this group of guys who we already were expecting them to rely on. The Jaden Higgins, Jalen Knoll, and of course now the Ariante Ursary combination there.
It's one thing to get 3 or 4 contributors and even guys you feel good about giving second contracts to. Like, you get 3 or 4 out of a draft class, you're laughing.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks they should hit. Not everybody, but people think, like, oh, if you only hit on half your picks, what happened with the other half? It's the draft. Like, not everybody hits.
I feel like we named 5 possibles for this year.
I do. Well, and it's
from this class.
And what I was going to say is, it's one thing to do it when you're drafting 2nd and 3rd in the draft. Like, it's, yeah, you know, good job. You hit on the 2nd and 3rd overall picks in the draft. We're talking about 2 straight drafts now where – last year, they got 2 what I think can be high-level starters. Kamari Lassiter already arguably is a high-level starter based on his numbers.
Yes.
I know that he doesn't resonate around the league as much as the 2 guys on Philly do because they won the Super Bowl. If Kamari Lassiter were on the Eagles, he'd be getting the same love that Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean are getting right now. Period, point blank. Kamari Lassiter is an excellent NFL football player, and Kalen Bullock is good with the potential to be great. So that's 2. Kate Stover is vastly improved. You know, Blake Fisher looks like he might be a miss right now. We'll see. It's still early in his career. But those are 3 guys right there. And then we just named 5 guys here early in training camp that are popping. If you're getting 3 or 4 guys and you're not picking till 34th or 42nd in the draft, that's an excellent job of evaluation.
Oh, but not only – this is worth pointing out as we're talking about this. Not only just not picking, but actively opting out. Like punting from the first round.
Trading out of the first round.
They traded out of the first round in back-to-back years. Now, we understand the previous year there were, like, Stephon Diggs implications and they were, you know, what they were trying to do there. But both years they did it. And then when they drafted in said 2nd round, they appear to get an immediate contributor. Last year with Kamari Lassiter, and it looks – I would be shocked if Jaden Higgins doesn't play a significant role on this team. So they've not only found the – I won't say diamond in the rough. 2nd round is still pretty valuable. But not only have they done a good job drafting in the 2nd round, they've actively sought to not pick in the 1st round to do this. Like, they've done it on purpose.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
That ESPN exercise is fun. And if I had to guess, I think the Texans are going to be number 1 next year, only because CJ and Will both have another year being under 25.
Yeah.
And we just rattled off a bunch of guys that could be contributing for them. You know, Stingley will age out of that exercise, that under 25 core. But Kamari Lassiter is still there. Kalen Bullock's 22.
Yeah.
You know, all these rookies I just named in this class are all 23.
Who knows what you'll think about them in a year?
Yeah.
Like, they could completely change the narrative and trajectory of this list based off of how they play as rookies.
Now, here's what's funny, B. Scott. I say funny. 3 years ago, 4 years ago, the Texans were 32nd in this exercise. the 2020,
yeah,
coming into the 2021
yeah,
season.
Yeah, the season I referenced a while ago. Yeah, I will never forget it.
They bumped up to 26 the next season because they had drafted Stingley and Petrie, and they, you know, they maybe had a couple other guys that looked like they might be some. 26 still ain't great. That year, the exercise of who, which teams had the top 10 core of under 25 players 3 years ago, intuitively you would think, well, three years later, this should be a slew of teams that are Super Bowl contenders or perennial playoff teams. So in some ways, I'm kind of poking holes in something that's giving us a lot of optimism about the Texans.
Sure.
Now, the fact that the Texans have done it 2 years in a row, I think is a little different than some team just rising up and doing it. These are the top, I'm going to rattle these off. These are the top 10 teams that had the best under 25-year-old cores heading into the 2022 season. Number one, Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, man.
Number two, Los Angeles Chargers. Playoff team. Okay, playoff team. Number three, the New York Jets. Remember, that was the reason Aaron Rodgers wanted to go there.
Yeah.
Because they had that great young core.
Feels so long
And now
ago.
They're the Jets again. Yeah. Number four, the Atlanta Falcons, who are, I think are just a mid team this year, probably.
Yeah. They're in the worst division in football.
Number five, Miami Dolphins, who Mike McDaniel might be getting fired. That was the Dolphins. That was at the period of time for the Dolphins where they could really start to brag about all the things they did with the Laremy Tunsil draft capital they got.
Yeah.
Like 3 years into those picks. And now where are they? Six, Jacksonville. Seven, Detroit. Okay.
Okay. That's the first team that you've mentioned that you might would rather be right now than the Texans.
And what have they done? They've supplemented that 2022 class with Sam Laporta and Jahmyr Gibbs and Jack Campbell. The point of this, eight, Philly won the Super Bowl,
yeah,
which is going to back up my next point. Nine, Cincinnati. 10, Tampa Bay. The point of this exercise, especially with Detroit and Philadelphia, like the lesson learned is that you got to keep doing this.
Yes.
You can't have draft classes. You can't follow up two or three, like two good classes that get you into the top 10 on a list like this with two clunkers. The league is just too unforgiving when it comes to that.
Yeah.
The Lions and the Eagles kept drafting well after that.
Well, and the ability to hit on beyond the obvious, mm-hmm, right? Which is the credit that we're really giving the Texans here. It's like, yeah, they got the second and third pick, right, from 2 years ago, but also hitting on picks beyond that second, yes, round and beyond.
Yes, the Chargers, or not the Chargers, the Lions got it right with Aiden Hutchinson.
Right.
I know he broke his leg last year, but Aiden Hutchinson is an excellent football player. They got it right with him, but they got it right a year or two later with trading up to get Jahmyr Gibbs,
right,
and drafting Sam Laporta in the, I think they traded to get him too. They, yeah, because that was the Texans' old pick from the Cardinals trade.
Those two weren't as obvious as drafting Aiden Hutchinson.
As drafting Aiden Hutchinson, yeah. So you've got to be able to do it with draft capital that's not quite as premium. So. But I think the Texans are going to be at the top of that list next year. Now, it's got to turn into playoff runs, you know, to the point of, you know, some of the texters saying, you know, I don't care what their record is through the first five games. They need to get past the divisional round. I get it. I hope, you know what I'd rather? I'd rather they go 0-5 and make it past the divisional round. How's that?
Yeah.
for those of you weighing in with alternate scenarios to my poll question.
It's the reason why I ended up landing on, hey, even if you beat the Ravens, I'm not going to overreact to that because.
Oh, see, I will.
You know. Well, I will at the time, but more so big pictures. Like, I'll be in the moment.
Yeah.
We'll be hype about it. But I'm not going to be like, hey, they're going to the Super Bowl now.
No. And when it comes to handicap a playoff game in Baltimore, it'll factor in, but it doesn't mean you're picking the Texans to beat the Ravens in Baltimore in, say, the divisional round or a chance to get to the Super Bowl. I get that.
Yeah, beating them at Ravens is significant, I do think.
Yep. All right. Brandon Scott in for Seth Payne. Seth will be back tomorrow. Have we been the most diva-proof city in the NFL when it comes to a certain position? Saw an interview with a couple guys on the Texans yesterday with the NFL Network. I'm like, man, how did we get so lucky with this? We'll talk about that coming up next.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Payne and Pendergast, final segment, and we'll hand it over to the guys on Texans Training Camp Live, John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. We are in studio today. No Texans practice today. They're back at it tomorrow. They're at the Greenbrier next week, and Seth Payne and I will be out there at in West Virginia, keeping you up to speed on everything going on. Obviously, on the air, we'll be on the air, but you got to be following all the socials next week because we'll have all kinds of updates, and we'll be checking in with the other shows as well here, morning, noon, and night. So we're looking forward to that very much.
Follow us on TikTok. Since you mentioned socials, I do want to plug that. We're on TikTok now, folks.
Man.
You know, the world is changing, and sports radio is now on TikTok. So we want you to follow Sports Radio 610 on
What's
TikTok.
Is it just Sports Radio?
Yeah, Sports Radio 610.
Well, that's easy to remember.
We kept it very simple,
and
very
I can
easy.
Remember that.
All of our social media platforms are Sports Radio 610. Except Twitch, which is 610 Houston, but everything else.
There you go.
Sports Radio 610.
There you go. And if anybody knows, it's this man to my left right here.
That's
he
right.
handles all that stuff.
I am admin.
You're admin.
I am admin, yeah.
So NFL Network was out there yesterday at Texans training camp. They interviewed a handful of guys, including they did a sort of a combo interview with Nico Collins and Christian Kirk. And so we're going to play a cut from that. Both seem very happy to be playing alongside each other. Nico's been cycling through teammates here over the last few. Obviously, the first 2 years was just a complete revolving door. I don't even for Nico Collins' purposes, I don't even count 2021 and 2022 as part of the back of his football card.
Dude has seen some dark days.
He has. Some of these guys like Brevin Jordan and Titus Howard. I'm like, I've seen some things, man. But the last couple of years, you know, 2 years ago, it was Nico and Tank and, you know, probably what Robert Woods in there.
Yeah, Robert Woods, yeah.
Last year we knew it was supposed to be just over the moon with Nico and Tank and then Stephon Diggs coming here, and that in terms of all of them playing together at the same time didn't really come to fruition at all the way we thought it would. Now it's Nico with Christian Kirk being the vet, and then we'll see how these two rookies get mixed in. And then you got a bunch of guys that are fighting to make the team like Xavier Hutchinson and John Mechie, John Mechie's had a good couple of practices the last couple days, so he's battling to make the team. But Nico and Christian Kirk are the two guys that, if I had to bet, are going to be the leading receivers on this team. It would be those two. They did a sort of a group interview yesterday with the NFL Network and talked about how happy they are to be playing alongside each other.
It's a blessing. It's a blessing. You know, we know what CK brings to the team. You know, he's in the slide getting busy. You know, he made plays, man. It's an honor to have him part of the team. You know, I learn from him every single day. And so it's only right. We continue to grow, continue to learn from each other, and keep building.
And then for you, Christian, not only to get traded, but within the division, like, what was going through your mind when you heard you're leaving Jacksonville and now you're coming to a division rival in the Texans?
Yeah, I mean, I was just really excited for a new chapter and to join an organization like the Texans. Obviously, playing against these guys, playing against Nico, I got to watch real closely what they're able to do, and to be able to pair up with him and watch him work every single day, say it all the time, it makes a lot of sense of why he's been so successful the past couple years and why he's really one of the best at his position. And so I'm just honored to be able to be in the room now, be a part of this culture, and help take this thing to the next level.
I see the smile over there. You like what he's saying, huh?
My dog, man. Yeah. It means a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was, the two of them are there, just, and it's great. They're teammates, and they get along great, and they feel like they're going to complement each other. I'm just watching this. Like, Nico is an elite receiver in this league.
He's,
in my opinion, a top five wide receiver in the sport right now. Christian Kirk's really good. Got a nice big contract a few years ago, and he's a really good football player. I'm just watching these two. I'm like, man, we've been pretty diva-proof at the wide receiver position historically. Like, we even got a version of Stephon Diggs that wasn't a diva version.
That's why it was such an outlier.
What's in the water here, man?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
Andre Johnson and DeAndre Hopkins, I think, kind of, you know, the level of quarterback play he had for most of his careers could have really lashed out like a lot of receivers do, and
well,
he didn't.
Well, think about the Stephon Diggs point. They incentivized non-divaness in the way that they acquired him,
that's
right?
A good point, B.
Like
Scott,
they,
yeah.
they trade for him, and then they guarantee that year, you know, so give him more money up front, but then make him a free agent with an opportunity to make more money after the year.
Right,
so be on your best behavior type of scenario.
They kind of diva-proofed him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I said disincentivized diva-ness, but yeah, that diva-proof is a more efficient way of saying
like
it.
Like rush-proofing.
It's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
So they either acquire non-diva receivers, or in the rare cases in which they do, they diva-proof them. And then send them on their diva way, because what did he do after? As soon as he left.
Oh, he's on a boat.
He linked up with Cardi B.
Passing out bags of pink powder to a bunch of,
whoever's.
Models, OnlyFans. I have no idea who they were.
Everyone who's attractive is a model now. That's the beautiful thing about this era. It's like you don't have to actually be. Being a model used to be a profession.
Right.
Now you just simply have to look good and be able to work a camera.
Look good and put stuff up on social. It's the same way, like, that's. If you just want to put some audio out there, all of a sudden you're a broadcaster.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's it, man.
Look good, keep your phone charged, and you're a model.
And you're a model.
Yep.
You're a broadcaster. You know the irony of this whole thing, this whole diva thing, is that as I go through the litany of, I mean, the Texans haven't had many great receivers in their history. Like, it was Andre Johnson. You know, they've had, like, you know, Kevin Walter was a good number two for a number of years. So I'm not, like, diminishing guys, like, the careers they had.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, Pro Bowl caliber, potentially elite-level receivers.
Yeah, it's Andre Johnson, DeAndre Hopkins, and then this guy,
And then Nico Collins. And if I had to just talk about guys that maybe kind of had a sniff of that or maybe made a Pro Bowl somewhere else, ironically, the guy who's probably been the biggest diva out of all of them was Brandon Cooks, who was brought in here specifically to not be a diva.
Yeah.
He was a hand-picked Easterby guy.
But to be fair, it didn't seem like he became a diva until the very, very end.
Right, but he ultimately was.
Yeah, on his way out.
I'm not going to be part of a rebuild. I'm not going to... After getting an extension, after getting
That's
a two-year, $36 million extension, now I'm not going to be part of a rebuild. You knew who you were signing. This is why I get mad at Trey Hendrickson holding out and agitating and this and that. Like, man, you knew what team you were signing with. The Bengals, you signed with them the one offseason they decided to splurge. You know, they happened to hit a scratch off that offseason and they could go spend on you and DJ Reader and Mike Hilton. But no pun intended, a tiger doesn't change his stripes here.
Right. Yeah.
They're ultimately
literally
still a
very, in this case.
Very cheap franchise. Yeah. Like Brandon Cooks, you signed that contract with Davis Mills as your starting quarterback. Like, where did you think this thing was going?
Yeah, no, I mean, all of that.
Sorry, Davis, I didn't mean to have a drive-by on you there, but it was what it was back then.
All of that being fair, but at the same time, we got to remember how we talked about that team. Like, Brandon Cooks, diva at the end, we all agree.
Yeah.
But that was also the team where Brandon Cooks was one of the few players' jerseys that you might buy. Like, Brandon Cooks, Laramie Tunsil, early Derek Stingley days, eventually, I guess. Because that's,
2022. Yeah, because he was on the team in 2022.
Yeah, so, but I mean, he was on the team before that. So, 2021,
he made plays in that game that got them the second overall pick.
That's right.
He converted a 4th-and-13. Like, Brandon Cooks had one of his best games as a Texan in the one game that most Texan fans didn't want them to win. And then, as it turned out, winning was the absolutely right thing to do in that situation.
It's just wild that the Texans had created an environment that would make a diva type Brandon Cooks, because he was that to the team. Like, he was the number one guy, and inexplicably their best player, their best offensive weapon.
Hey, remember earlier in the show? Hey, remember 30 minutes ago when we were playing clips from the loquacious CJ Gardner-Johnson?
Yes.
And you were talking about, like, hey, man, just ask a guy a question, just see if get him talking, see what he'll say,
because
he'll just keep talking and talking and talking. I know who the opposite of that is on the Texans.
Oh, yeah.
As we're getting ready to head out here in a minute or so. This is Cade Stover being asked what he did this summer.
All right, let's go back to the farm, feed cows, work out, catch football, and do it again next day probably.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Sounds like a hell of a life, man.
Good talk. You're right. Like, that seems that's how you'd end a conversation with, hey, good talk.
Do you think that Cade Stover has ever been on a vacation? That's my question. Like, if anything, you're going to want to take like a week to clear your head, it's being an NFL football player.
I'm sure he's been on a vacation. I'm just curious on what his vacation version of vacation looks like.
Has he been on a vacation outside the state of Ohio?
I could see it, but couldn't you see him as like somebody that works on a vacation? Like, does things that feels like labor?
Yes.
Yeah.
I could see him finding farms where he goes on vacation and offering to help out.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So in, from that standpoint, no, he hasn't. Because that don't sound like
not
vacation.
Not my kind of vacation.
Exactly.
Yeah, his kind of vacation.
There you go.
B. Scott, appreciate you, my man.
Always fun, man.
Yeah,
always fun.
Appreciate you. That's Brandon Scott. Seth Payne back in tomorrow. We'll be back out at Texans training camp tomorrow as well. Texans training camp live is coming up next. In the loop after that. Followed by The Drive, followed by Area 45. I say all that to say keep it tuned to Sports Radio 610 all day long.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.